Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller. It is September 11th, so somber day. I hope we never forget about that. It is also the morning after the Philadelphia Massacre and one of the more dominating performances in a presidential debate that we've had over the last 20 years, I would say. This is up in the first rank.
Maybe the second most.
Yeah, honestly. I think it probably is. I think the two other ones are the first Romney Obama debate in 2012 and the first Clinton Trump debate in 2016. Make of that what you will. Since
do you
both
forget
of those,
anyone? Do you forget any?
You tell me maybe
one from 2 months ago.
Oh, well, yeah, but that
I don't
was
think
just
Trump
a,
turned in a dominating performance
yeah,
there. Joe
I,
Biden
I
just
Joe Biden had a health event
a,
on camera.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would say that both Mitt Romney and Hillary Clinton, winners of those two lopsided debates,
Hillary,
went
no,
on to
the Hillary
lose.
Well, we can get it. That Kamala's performance was nothing like Hillary's. I mean, that
it was so much better.
It was so much better.
I agree that Harris was better, but I think Hillary had a good, very sharp first debate. Anyway, we get on to that. I know you guys don't want to see anything that could possibly be bad from it. There's so much to talk about. We're going to get to all of it. We're going to do a good 35 minutes on Byron York and Tim's amazing. So, Tim, I guess you went to the spin room as Triumph the Insult comic dog, and it's glorious, and I want to hear all about that. But I want to go to Sarah first, because three of us were together briefly last night. Sarah, have you evolved in your thinking at all since we spoke at 11:30 last night?
Okay, so Tim's got great spin room content, but I've got fresh, hot focus group content. So we just did a group of swing voters from swing states. These are people who voted for Trump, voted for Biden in 2020. But we had three of them who we have talked to previously. They've been leaning RFK over Harris. And it was a clean sweep for Harris, both in head-to-head vote choice. So she had won those RFK leaners over with this debate performance. It was a clean sweep for Harris in terms of them believing that she had absolutely won the debate. The word that they used, and this is a thing that I think is really important and is something that she accomplished last night. One of the top words that people used organically without us bringing it up was presidential. She looked presidential.
That's good.
And there was a big, like, Harris skeptic in the group, like a guy who does not like her record as DA, knows a lot about it.
Even he,
we had him back in June, and so he was an RFK leaner. Even he got there on her. Despite still raising his objections about her time as the DA, but he was saying, he was like, Trump started talking about eating pets and I just did a spit take. The number of people who are just like, what was he talking about? He looks crazy. And here's the thing, much like the Biden debate, where, because I tweeted this morning, but I think it's important in terms of the reaction that we're seeing from Republicans, which is they're saying the thing that people said to me, the sort of Dem pollster and the activists, Dem activist, who was on stage with me that night, and who was very angry with me after the Biden debate because I was saying that is like a disaster for him. Like, I was being very honest with the audience. And I was like, guys, I'm going to level with you. It's my job to do clear-eyed analysis. And I'm going to tell you that might be campaign ending. And these guys were so mad at me. And what they said on the stage that night was, debates don't matter. And if you look at Ben Shapiro and a bunch of the Republicans today, they are trying to argue that debates don't matter, which I got to say, 6 weeks following a debate that caused one of the two major candidates to drop out, saying that debates don't matter is like a nuclear level hot take.
I think they're calling that cope.
Yeah, that's like high level copium here, especially. Oh, this was the other thing in the focus group. They were like, no, the moderators were good. Like, there was not this sense that, and these groups, these flipper groups, I just want to, they are, some people might be like, okay, these are people who voted for Biden before. And it's true that they are, but they are also temperamentally conservatives. Like, they are center right voters who just hate Donald Trump because he's like uniquely terrible, but like would love to vote for a Republican is typically this kind of group. And so this is a group where after, you know, the last 3.5 years of Biden, we saw real backsliding. I talk about the backsliding a lot. And so for her to have, I think she did the thing that we desperately needed her to do, which was to make the case, not just that Trump is terrible, because these guys already kind of know that, but to make an affirmative case for her. And I think she did that.
Did they hear enough specifics? Do they hear enough policy? Did they? Because this is one of the things we've heard in your focus groups is the, well, you know, I don't really know what she wants to do, or I don't know what her policies are. Did you get a sense that people either heard enough or didn't hear enough? Do they want more on that?
Someone said Trump putting his ego before the country because they heard her say for the first time about Trump killing the border deal. And I cannot stress this enough, right? Like, people tune in to see these people go head to head, and lots of them don't know specific information. And so people were being introduced to new information, like the fact that he scuttled the immigration deal. So one guy was talking about that. That was the guy who also said literally did a spit take on the pet eating thing. It felt like the dynamic completely reversed. Now Trump's the old man that can't keep up. It was fun to watch. Also, the why didn't you do any of this the last 3.5 years attack? It didn't land. Somebody said you were the man in the chair. How are you going to pick at her when you didn't do it? Right. So like that. I will say this is now I'm going to have to paraphrase because I don't have the direct quote. One of the things that I think really helps her on the substance is that she gave enough of it that people felt like they learned new things about her. Donald Trump offered no substance. And so that people were also like aware of that, like at least from a voter point of view, listening to what they said, it wasn't like they walked away being like, she ticked through all these policies and now I feel like I know where she stands on everything. It was more like, I feel like I learned more about her and Trump seemed like a crazy man.
That's encouraging to me in particular because my one hangover, just something about how I process these sorts of things, like almost always the morning after, I feel even more strongly about whatever I felt the night before, right? Like the more time that passes where you think about it, like whatever my first instinct was, I'm like, yeah, it was even a bigger blowout.
The more I think about
it,
the more right I am.
Exactly. this is a human, you know, solipsistic kind of thing. So, but the one nagging thing I had this morning about it was, she had passed the presidential bar for me. Right. So I'm encouraged to hear that multiple people use that word presidential.
Four people used it.
Because, you know, my fears of anxiety over lingering sexism, race, right? Like how did people process that did not like her or did not feel like she was up for it? I felt like she was extremely strong on that stuff, particularly in the national security portion. On the economy portion, it happened at the beginning, and I do think she was kind of getting her sea legs. Like, really, the turning point of the debate was the kind of ham-fisted troll over the crowd size. Like, she didn't even deliver it that well. It was, like, totally out of nowhere. You know, it's an immigration answer, and then at the end she's like, and if you want to learn about Trump, you can go to his rallies. And then she didn't really even land the line that well about how people are leaving early. But then Trump dissembles and you can kind of see her confidence build. And I felt like her answers were much more natural and flowing from there. So on the economy, maybe not as much because it was early, but on the rest of it, she showed such command, particularly by the time you get to the national security section at the end, you know, which is like, you know, if this is this commander in chief test at the line I've stolen from you, Sarah, about how Trump is a Putin stand-in. I mean, to me, it just feels like she passed that stuff with flying colors. And like the nagging little thing in the back of my head is, it was like, but do old white guys in Scranton, do they disagree with that? Do they look at her faces and decide that she looked child? I don't fucking know what these people think. So one focus group only, but it does match what we saw from the other public focus groups that the other media companies did. And from private dial tests. I mean, we've heard from Harris campaign people's dial tests, also media, neutral media dial tests. And it was overwhelming for her.
Yeah. And you see the Republican reaction, which also tells you what they think, right? They also think that he got his clock cleaned. And they're also worried about it. And he's now backing away from the idea of doing more debates. We'll unpack that as we go. All right. So Tim, let's go to the candy. Tell me about
going straight to the candy. Before we get to the spin room candy, cause it's related. Cause one of the questions I kept asking people is what was Donald Trump's best moment? So that was the non insult the comic dog side. That was the thoughtful journalist, you know, engaging with
the pretty subtle. It's a pretty subtle
it's a trick
troll,
question.
Actually.
He did not have a single good moment.
Was
it the part
myself.
Where he started shouting, they're eating dogs and cats?
They're eating the dogs. Was it the Ashley Babbitt defense?
Where he said we about the insurrectionists. Yeah.
And the police, I didn't even notice this. A replier said this to me. He's like, you're missing the other part of the clip where he calls the police, the other side.
The other side, yeah.
The other side. And just a horrific
thing. Part where he talked about being friends with the Taliban.
Yeah, friends with being friends with the Taliban. He's deep in, like, the MAGA cinematic universe stuff. You know, he's dropping J6 and Laura. I was watching Laura, and she defended me on Charlottesville. I'm thinking normal people cannot even translate, like, a certain percentage of the stuff that he's saying. There's actually two elements to that. Certain people... And no one could translate like the gibberish he was giving on answers like the abortion question. But then even when I knew what he was talking about, because
he's very good on fertilization, Tim.
Yeah, I know. Like there were many parts where I can't, like normies had to be like, who are you talking about? Who is Laura? Who is Ashley? Who is Laura? So anyway, but I was joking with you guys in the green room. I was like, so I just finished the Daily Pod with SE. And I got to the end of it and I was like, shit. I forgot to even bring up the healthcare section. So it's like he was so bad last night. And there was such a dearth of positive things to talk about. And there was so much to mock him about that, like, I didn't even get to, like, what was probably, I mean, don't you think that was the catchiest thing that they will tag on to about his plans? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, it's something that over the last, like, six elections has moved a lot of votes. I mean, healthcare has moved a lot of votes, right?
And just for him to say that, like, he has, what was
I don't
it? Was
have a plan. I have the concept of a plan.
Concepts of plans. And if we come up with something, and then he goes to that. If we have the concepts of plans, and it's like, if we come up with something good, it's like, if we come up with something good, you've been running for president for 9 years. Did Tulsi not even mention healthcare in the prep for 2 weeks? And it was like he hadn't even contemplated talking about healthcare. So it's just so atrocious. And so when I get to the spin room, we'll set the Lindsey Graham part aside for a second because that was actually my first encounter. But when I start going to the guys, you have the placards, you know, and for people who have seen the pictures or been in the spin room, it's like each side has surrogates and they have different colored placards. And it's like the Harris team's placards, like their placard holders are holding them way. It's a Statue of Liberty. Come talk to Josh Shapiro. Come talk to Kazir Khan. Please talk to Jason Crow. Jason would love to talk to you. And then like the Trump team has a different colored placards and they're like barely holding them over their head. Like, don't find me. Don't find me, Byron Donalds. I don't want to talk to you. And so I'm like looking around. So it took me a second to find the placard and I'm going around it. I saw Dave Mossy first, who is, on the Trump campaign in 2020 is a surrogate, runs Citizens United, which I'm sure people have heard of, is a douchebag, made an anti-gay joke in front of me before he knew I was gay back in the day. So, you know, me and Bossy go way back. I just walked up to him and I was like, hey, man, good to see you. It's been a while. He's like, yeah, hey, good to see you. I was like, what did you think was the best part tonight? And he's like, what? I was like, what do you think was his best answer? He goes, well, you're really putting me on the spot. He goes, you're really putting me on the spot here. I was like, if you did the reverse, I could rattle off a million good things that Kamala did. And then I did the same exchange with Corey, who immediately chuckled and wanted to relive our spin room encounter from 8 years ago, where he assaulted me, I guess we could say, like physically assaulted me. And I was okay. I wasn't hurt, but I mean, you aren't supposed to body check some person. I don't know if that's like a jailable offense, kind of like his stabbings, but you know, you aren't supposed to, you aren't supposed to body check another person. So I don't know, a minor assault, I guess. And I asked him the same question and he had nothing. And then, Hugo Lowell like started like kind of picking up on this and like asking other and like asking the same question. And he was like, they couldn't find anybody to come up with anything. So anyway, I thought that was like the most interesting part of the spin room on the substantive part. And then, you know, do you want to go straight into the insult trap, the insult comic dog part, or do you have other,
I mean, do you want to make me beg like a dog?
Can I just say that I was listening to Trump when Trump kind of was doing the thing where the reporters were all, and I could just hear Tim screaming. I could hear him being like, why wouldn't you look at her? He was like, there's my guy. I hear him back there just screaming his little heart out.
It was live on Fox. I was in it, like on Fox, if you're watching his thing. And the people get so mad at me because I was screaming loud and loud, like inappropriately loud. Why wouldn't you look at her? Were you scared to look at her? Why wouldn't you even look at her? And why wouldn't you look at the vice president? And one of his comms people is like, it's like, you're like, are you a child? Like, are you like, what's wrong? Like, are you, you're just like a guy jeering at a basketball game. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're not even on it. I was like, am I? Whatever. And, but then the other reporters started getting mad at me, which I see why, because on Fox, he's like answering a substantive question from somebody else about whether he's going to debate again. And you can't hear his answer because all you can hear is me screaming over the din, asking him why he wouldn't look at her, which was pretty notable that he wouldn't look at her.
It was weird.
Real beta cuck move, I got to say.
Real beta cuck move. And Ed O'Keefe,
he let her come over to do the handshake at his podium, yes, instead of him going over to her. I mean, it is.
He wasn't going to handshake her.
All the stuff was kind of beta. That's the stuff that surprises me, that he didn't have gamed out better, because he understands TV, right? And he thinks about TV a lot. And he was just unprepared on the logistics of how to handle being on screen with her.
Maybe he wanted to look tough. I don't know what the thinking was. But yeah, the handshake, I mean, it was over. The debate was over from the handshake, basically. She had to walk around walk around the podiums to get to him.
Does like a weak, limpy thing, you know? Usually he tries to dominate handshakes. Yeah. Like, he's got a very specific thing where he grabs you and pulls you toward him.
Yeah.
But he like clearly had decided to go in there and not shake her hand. And so when she made it a thing, he kind of limp wristed.
It was super limp. And then the not looking, and she's staring him down the whole time. He has to notice this. She's staring him down. He has to like notice that there was peripheral vision. And then Ed O'Keefe, who's like the pool that's in there, reported that during the commercial break, he didn't look at her. And he immediately walked off stage, and she just sat there and like took notes. Then he came back on and didn't look at it the whole time, just seething. So it's very beta, very angry, and very sad old man, really, the whole vibe of it. So anyway, he didn't answer my question about why I wouldn't look at her. And so then I immediately pivoted out, and the same comms person who was chastising me, I noticed in the corner standing next to Byron York. Your friend, the Washington Examiner, former colleague almost of yours.
Not a colleague.
Oh, okay.
Long
time Washington Examiner writer, early on the Trump train, early. But he's been a hack since he came out of the womb. Okay, so he was a hack for Bush.
He was a hack when he was at National Review.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's always been a hack. So I had a kind of relationship because he was a hack for Bush, initially.
He's a stenographer. And then,
yeah. And then as Trump takes over, so he knows deep in his heart, this man, Byron York, that he's a hack, right? Because he's always been a hack. And he knows Trump lost and he knows it's pathetic. And I see this Tim Murtaugh, who had chastised me for asking a very fair question of his boss during the gaggle, as I am wont to do as a member of the media. And I walked over and I made a beeline for them and just leaned in and put my hand on both their shoulders. I was like, Tim, Byron, nice job finding Byron, or like, good job with Byron. Byron will write up something real nice for you. And I gave both a slap, like a little slap on the back, and started walking out. And Byron is so mad. Like in the article, it does not reflect how mad he is. He turns around and at a volume that is too high for the spin room, he goes, fuck you. Fuck you. A double fuck you. And I looked back and kind of chuckled and gave him a little wave.
With his Kermit the Frog voice.
I was like, oh, guess things, not all is well. Not all is well in MAGA. In MAGA scribe land, you know, we don't have much to say, don't have much to do. It's tough. So, you know, my evening went on from there. I wrote about it more. I'm happy to field additional questions, but I got to tell you, I was having the time of my life. Nobody was having more fun in that spin room.
You were dancing like no one was watching.
Only person had a better night than me last night was Doug. You know, because even the Democrats that were also riding high, and I talked to several Democrats, I wrote about my exchange with Gavin, who was, I thought, genuinely happy for her, on Gavin's interview with Pod Save America, which was like close to the switch, you could sense maybe a little bit of what if.
Should be me!
Yeah, exactly. You could sense it. You can sense these things. I didn't sense it at all. He was thrilled. He was giddy. And so I was talking to other Democrats who are also giddy and enjoying themselves, but it's just, they were missing that extra layer that I have, which is the result, just the bad things happening to bad people that I know, you know? And, fucking Gavin doesn't know Byron York. He's never had to deal with this asshole. He doesn't know Dave Bossie. He's never made a homophobic joke when he's sitting in a conference room, you know? He doesn't know these fucking, he's never been hip checked by Corey Lewandowski. I know these bastards. And so it's like, it's a little extra level of pleasure to be able to walk around and enjoy the same joy that Gavin has, but also enjoy the pain of the foe, you know?
Byron York is a journalistic gigolo, by which I mean that his entire, like the last 15 years of his career has been spent trying to write things that make the wife of his owner happy. This is literally true. So the Washington Examiner is owned by Phil Ann Schutz.
Phil Ann Schutz's wife was his owner.
No. So
the wife of his literal owner.
His literal owner. And and so Nancy
Ann Schutz.
Because they don't make
money. They don't have actual fans readers.
They do not. Yeah. They don't have readers. They don't have revenue. And so it's just a big sinkhole for Phil Ann Schutz's money. And Nancy Ann Schutz, who is much more MAGA than Phil is. Mm. She just thinks of Byron as her sweet little poodle, and she loves him, and she loves how conservative he is, and how good he is, and how stalwart, and she makes sure that it's known that Byron's her favorite. And so Byron's, can you imagine being a grown man in your 60s, and your entire job is writing fanfic for some 75-year-old rich woman? So that her husband will keep cutting you checks. fucking asshole.
This is what people come to this podcast
for. Nobody
Navel
knows who Byron York is. They don't know who Byron York is.
Random MAGA bloggers. Okay. Yeah. That's what people come here for. Sure. They want to hear
our
vendettas.
We can cut all that out.
No, I don't need to cut it. I just want to ask Tim. He missed. I want the Lindsey Graham anecdote, who, unlike Byron York, most of our readers and listeners have heard of.
Okay. The Lindsay thing was fun. So immediately, before I even got through the magnetometers. How do you say that? Magnometers?
Magnetometers.
I had it right.
Yeah.
I'm walking. It's a very long hallway. It's this cavernous convention center. End of one side is the magnetometers. Behind that is the room where the filing center was. Everyone's in there because Trump was about to be in there. And so like the Secret Service is coming and there's a buzz. And so nobody's outside. Except for Lindsey Graham and his, staffer, young lady. And I walked up and the security guys, and I was about to walk up into the magnetometer and took a little left. It's like, hey there, Senator. And Lindsay knows me, as you all know. Spent a lot of time with Lindsay. And
what was the vibe of his greeting?
Uncomfortable smile initially. A very uncomfortable smile. Hey, but I began affably,
and you
I
was guys like, have "Good been to drinking see you." Buddies.
Oh yeah, we've hung.
Right.
I was like, "Good to see you. It's been a while." And he's, you know, cautious smile looking at me. He's like, yeah, friendly. And I'm like, this could be your moment. Come back, come over. Like we used to gossip about this guy. We used to shit talk this guy, right? Like it's time after that debate, it's time. And so immediately when he sees the worm is turning, he gets fucking pissed. He goes 0 to 100 on me. Purple, beet red face. You should be ashamed. You should be ashamed. I was like, I should be ashamed. Like, you should be ashamed. What, you know, and so we go back and forth on that. Trump was great. Trump was the best for the economy. Trump was best for this. Trump was the best for that. Everything was wonderful under Trump. And I'm like, I'm like, is that true? I was like, then I was like, how can you do this after he was just in there talking about giving Eastern Europe to Putin? I mean, like they asked him about, you know, Kamala brought up about how Putin's like eye in Poland, and Trump's just like, and he's like, well, they were scared of him. They never would have done it under Trump. And I'm like, Lindsay, I'm like, you don't believe this. I was like, you don't believe this. Like, come on. And then he goes, I do believe it. And it keeps going. And I'm like, really? And he's like, everything was great. And I was like, everything was great. I was like, it ended with you running around scared. You were running scared of your own supporters. They were chasing you down. You were running around the Capitol. Then you were running around the airport. I was like, did things really end that great? And then he gets really pissed at me and starts yelling. And I look over at his aide, who is just like mortified by this exchange. Like, how is this happening? And I kind of forget if it was him or me, but one of us offered like a temperature, like it was getting really hot. Like, let's turn down the temperature olive branch. And he fist bumps me. He's like, all right. And we fist bump. And I was like, okay. We can just, that was really bad though, right? And that's when he just just immediately lets go. No. I said, that was really bad. I mean, like, come on. Like, Matt Gaetz, Tulsi, like, you don't like these people. That was really bad, right? And that's where he goes, yeah, he should fire the whole team. It was terrible. He was unprepared. It was a disaster. I was like, that's what I thought. Good to see you, Senator. Turned right around, started typing out the tweet about what he just told me before I even made it through the magnetometer. It's like, and then as I was walking away, I shouted back, always welcome to do this again on the podcast. Welcome anytime. Happy to do it. You have my number.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
I've talked too much. Can I take over host for a second?
Sure.
I feel like I already knew what Sarah thought. I heard her last night on the live stream, and also me and Sarah kind of have a cosmic connection after 20 years together. So I sort of sensed what her views were. I mean, JVL, sometimes you're contrarian, you're a weird bird. Sometimes you have a little different views. I don't know. I mean, like last night, like how much better than your expectations was it? Like are you zagging from any of the, coconut, celebrations today?
Here's the only way in which I'm zagging is that I am a little bit nervous about what kind of country we live in. Because here's the thing. The other thing that strikes me is she's positioned herself in the absolute dead center of American politics. You know, she's like, I'm a gun owner. I love small businesses.
That was one weird thing I said. Is she a gun owner?
You know,
there's a story about how in 2019 she bought a gun. Because I also was like, very smart of them to have her purchase a gun 2 weeks ago so that she could say that line. Yeah. But okay.
I got to say, there was the one line when I was like, even Tim, I was like, we might take some guns. I don't know. It happened at the very end of the debate. And I was like, we've already dominated. All right. Do we have to give in to these fuckers? I don't know. I was channeling our progressive listeners on that one answer. I was like, all right, you don't need to give everything to the mods. I mean, she was giving everything. She was just going full, you know, Nikki Haley voter.
No, it was full Nikki Haley, right? You know, tax cuts for people. We're going to increase supply in the housing market. We're gonna be incredibly tough and face down China and Russia. We're going to defend Eastern Europe. I mean, it was Biden centrism, but with even less progressive flavoring in it. And
there was some free money handout stuff at one point. She was like, we're going to give $5,000 here and $10,000 here.
There's some tax cut stuff, but that's just populism. Like that's now what conservatism is.
Yeah, sure.
And
it was fun to hear Trump try to explain tariffs too. Did you know that other countries pay all of the tariffs? That was such an interesting economic point.
As like a tax that America can levy on foreign governments is the craziest fucking thing I've ever. Anyway,
it's the Mexico will pay for the wall,
right?
But yeah. For 2024. Right.
Yeah. But here's what worries me. I just like, what else can she do for you people? You know, and like at some point, and I said this, you know, we are not in a recession. The economy is very good. We got more inflation numbers in the last day or so. Inflation is, you know, way down. We're going to get within a week from today, we're going to get a rate cut from the Fed. They're going to go down either 25 or 50 basis points. Gas is cheap. Grocery prices are down. We just had the most air travel in the month of August that America has ever had, ever. More people went flying in August than have ever gone flying in American history in a single month. If with all of that and a candidate who is a good candidate, who is not, everyone's like, oh, you know, we don't like Trump, but Biden is so old. And like, okay, the Democrats are like, okay, we'll get rid of the old guy for you. And here's a young candidate who's good. And she won't be liberal. She won't be progressive. She's going to be a super centrist moderate. She's going to be much closer to the political center than Trump is, frankly, on every single issue. And if you do all that and it's still like, yay, maybe we can win by 5,000 votes in Pennsylvania. I mean, I'll take it. I'd rather win Pennsylvania than lose it. But I don't know, man. I don't know, because you know
it feels like it. Like, why couldn't it be? Let's just play fan fiction here. It's not going to happen. Okay. Just among us, pals. We're just pals right now. Why shouldn't this be Josh Shapiro versus Doug Mastriano?
It should be.
It kind of is. It kind of is. Like, what is the meaningful
45.
Difference
this should
between
be
Kamala
45
and Josh and Doug and Trump?
I'll
There's
tell
some
you.
Differences, but yeah, please tell me. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a couple things. One. You can never forget how much Trump's celebrity insulates him from normal political rules, because so much of it is a show and people interpret it as such. And I think part of why last night was so interesting is he's getting worse at the show.
Way worse.
Bad. He sounds old. He looks old. He can't. And like the split screen is much worse for him. People were talking about this in the focus group, right? She looks young and energetic. He looked grumpy, and his flesh tone, which is never great.
It's artificial. Like, his flesh tone is decided by his makeup artist.
Yeah, but so last night, I got to say, even
Can we
when,
not say that word anymore?
What?
Flesh tone.
Oh.
Let's stop saying it after
just,
this.
Fine. Just,
was he moist?
No.
He was a little, actually.
Well, it was spittle inflected. Yeah. But here's when I was watching him, he has those like weird tanning circles around his eyes that, you know, have like the slight white eyes. But it looked like he was going to sleep, like in the very beginning, even when she was kind of not at her most forceful. Right. She was a little nervous. He was like, because they tell him, like, don't get too crazy. He like. Pulls way back and just looks, he looked sleepy. He looked old man sleepy.
Sick.
Yeah. And then he started talking, right? And there was sort of a little bit of like, is this how he sounds right now? Like, does he have a cold too? In that way that I was like, I thought that the contrast that they wanted to jump out really did jump out.
Okay, good answer.
Wait, hold on.
Let me get back to where you were, though.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm helping you get back to where you were. No. That was good. We should have talked about his flesh. Because it was important.
The celebrity. I was saying, why?
So why can't he be Doug Mastriano? Why couldn't we get to a point where she wins by 12? Pennsylvania just
here's
happens.
The thing.
Where a guy lost by 12 in Pennsylvania.
I do not think it's crazy to believe that the polls are missing a lopsided level of enthusiasm. Like, it is very possible that there is going to be much more enthusiasm for her and much less for him, and the polls aren't picking it up in the way that they're doing things. Like, it's possible. I'm not saying it is happening, but it's possible. I still think his celebrity has always just done things. Here's the other thing. I don't think that I was, you know, I did this group. I kind of made people take their medicine. I did a focus group episode with Benji Sarlin. I think it's very good and people should go listen to it. It's tough, right?
The number of texts I received from people that are like, had to quit the focus group today.
Yeah.
I honestly, seven people contacted me to say they had to quit the podcast.
I believe you.
Not forever, just episodes.
I think that even for people like us who, and especially Tim, are very sophisticated political observers, not just of the cable news sphere, but like also the tick. This is where I mean Tim is like also social media, also the things that like might go unnoticed by your average reporter that are happening below the surface. The sort of manosphere and all of its tendrils, like when people are looking at the massive polarization between men and women, I don't think people have baked in yet how much is going on. And it's like from Ben Shapiro to Matt Walsh to like Trad Life stuff to all the way to like the Andrew Tates and the Jordan Petersons. Like there is an ecosystem, an enormous one, that is hitting youngish men, but like maybe 18 to 40 that have created.
Maybe 50,
right? That have created I think we're seeing just the tip of the iceberg in gender polarization, and that two cycles from now, like you're almost going to have people sorted, like gender will become, unlike like right now where it's sort of like education or it could be geography, gender's going to become, and I don't know how we're going to get people to marry each other. Like, I don't know how we're going to maintain the species and keep birthing Americans. As we become just more and more gender polarized,
I can feel that Donald Trump is going to be elected and free IVF for everybody. Yeah, so you don't actually.
I love
have to
that
partner.
He knows everything about fertilization. Yeah.
Very good on fertilization.
But what do you guys think about this theory? Because I do think when you're like, well, why doesn't it translate into more? I think that there are, and I think that last night, if you don't hate women, you look at her and think, my God, that was presidential. She looked excellent. Yeah. She sounded excellent. I think if you kind of hate women a little bit, you get a Frank Luntz type take where it's like all those faces, and Megyn Kelly too, who I'm not sure I've seen a woman on Twitter nastier to women, more self-loathing after Trump said she was bleeding from her eyes or wherever. I don't know that I've seen somebody more willing to be disgusting to other women than Megyn Kelly is. And like, if you sort of hate women, then you watch Kamala Harris doing what I think is a very normal human reaction to what Donald Trump was blathering. But you decide like, no, men are going to hate this because they hate a woman who is looking skeptically at a man.
Yeah.
But I think their big, strong boy last night took a huge L and looked like a beta cuck. And I think that makes them feel sick in their tummies.
Yeah.
I
just think to wrap that up, I do. That's part of the answer. It doesn't feel like the full answer, but I do think it's part of the answer. There's a category, particularly of men, that just like couldn't be bothered to vote. Forget like maybe they voted for Shapiro, or maybe they just couldn't even be fucking bothered like to care about this midterm election with this weirdo, Doug Mastriano, like who seems like a Christian, like Confederate cosplaying freak. And like for whom Trump has this appeal to the, I do think that there is a category of people. Is that 10% of the electorate though? Like, if, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's the that's just the thing that's like, it's a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a conundrum that, that Josh could, because Shapiro could just, you know, win by in the teens.
Doug Mastriano sneaking out of
1%. Another, I guess the other side of that is like Josh Shapiro's kind of codes, even though he's Jewish and an attorney, still codes more center than a black woman from the Bay Area. So there's a little bit of that too. Of
I think there's a little bit of that. But I also just think like Doug Mastriano, and this is where I go to the celebrity thing, is like people have a strong opinion about Trump being their weapon to own the libs, right? In a way that I don't think none of these other guys kind of break. They don't look at Blake Masters and be like, you will be the cudgel that I will use to exact revenge on my very annoying colleague who has, you know, their pronouns in their signature on their email, where Donald Trump does.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. But you didn't answer my question, which is, what are we supposed to make of this country if it really does wind up like...
Can we just not yet? I mean, we're not there. Why do we have to?
I just want to be prepared.
We're going to have a long time to talk about.
You know,
if
you expect disappointment, you can never be disappointed, Sarah.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else came up in the group that I think is really effective? Kamala Harris also went out of her way to say that she'd earned the endorsement of a lot of Republicans, over 200 Republicans, you know, that
good
worked
job
for Georgia.
That group that gave her that talking point. Kudos to you. I know some of you are listening. That was a press release that paid mega dividends.
Yeah,
it did. And it forced Trump into another weird part of his rant where he talks about how he fired everyone and nobody was any good. And it was, I think he really was. I think he had so many bad moments that like we haven't even begun to be able to tally them. But one of them was him having to sort of jibber jabber his way through why as vice president and most of the generals who worked for him don't support him, and him saying that they're all terrible, which is just him doing sort of the grievance fueled stuff, which she then very effectively pivoted when he would do that. She would say, see, he doesn't care about you. He's not talking about you. I will care about you. I thought the little bit like your dreams, your aspirations was like a tad much, and they could have been a little more straightforward with it, but said it a few too many times. But I thought it was a deeply effective to draw that contrast. I don't know. I wanted to throw that out there.
No, I agree. And I don't know. I mean, I think we should talk about this next, whether there's going to even be another debate. But if there is, we couldn't be given notes more on the margins here.
Yeah,
given
totally.
This type of slaughter that was. But I would have, like, that was his most prepared response, actually, on all of the firings. Right? Like it was the one time where he felt like he had talking points. I mean, it was, again, it was like absurd, right? Like that he, to, you know, defend himself. And I thought that her initial attack was very strong, listing out the 4-star general that worked for you and what he said, et cetera, et cetera. That was like the one exchange that felt like a traditional debate. It was like she had a prepared attack, he had a prepared response. I do wish like her counter response was like, did you fire Mike Pence actually? Can we just drill down on one of those? Was Mike Pence fired or did something else happen? Can I get a ruling on that? Your vice president that's not supporting you this time? Because it you know, I would like to put a chink in that talking point. But anyway, I'll send it through.
Yeah. Here's the thing about I just, you know, speaking of Republicans who are twisting themselves into pretzels, like your point with Lindsey Graham. Donald Trump refused to say he would defend Ukraine, refused to say he would defend Ukraine. And as she pointed out, he has talked about abandoning Europe. And I just, you know, where are these neocons? Like, where is Mike Pompeo? Where is everybody? What's happening here?
Can I field this?
Please.
Because I know the answer.
Please.
They're at AEI and they're hoping that the Democrats take care of the bastard for them. That's where they are. They're sitting around at AEI hoping that they don't have to get their hands dirty. They don't have to say that they endorse Kamala Harris or that Harris's worldviews are closer to theirs than Trump's, because that would be icky because she has a D next to her name, and people with D's next to their name are bad. They're radicals and statists and California progressives. And so they just hope that Democrats will just make this problem go away for them. And then after that, they hope that the real Republican Party will just come back to them and ask them to come back and guide them again. And this is delusional on both ways, because I'm sorry, if you believe in sort of like the old Nikki Haley stuff, the only place for your views these days is the Democratic Party. And I have trouble seeing a world in which that changes in the foreseeable future.
I was listening to Sarah's podcast with David French and the other person, and on 2x speed, just to listen to it. And there was a point that David made that I was thinking about last night during the debate that I'd like to drill down on. JBL knows well the old three-legged stool. Mm-hmm. He was always only a two-legs man. Me and Sarah were also only two legs, different legs.
Different legs.
But it was the social conservatism.
Between us, we had four good legs.
Social conservatism, the fiscal, and the national security. And I just think about those things, and it's like, he is literally on stage saying he's going to give Eastern Europe to Putin. Mm-hmm. He could not be further from the foreign policy leg of the Reagan stool. The fiscal conversation, he does talk about tax cuts, but clearly the thing he's most passionate about are the massive tariffs, and it is like the core part of his agenda, and that's what we spent the most time on during the economic portion of the debate. And then on the social side of the debate, he cannot offer a compelling defense of the overturn of Roe v. Wade, and he's kind of for it, he's kind of against it, he's all over the place. And then I just would throw on there that during that exchange, I thought it was so strong from Kamala, where she was like, we're not going to let the government, we're especially not going to let Donald Trump tell us what to do with our bodies. And the subtext of that is all of Donald Trump's sexual assaults, obviously. So on the social, I guess this leg that is still the sturdiest, I guess, would be the social conservative leg. But Donald Trump's not a social conservative. He cannot speak to it with any type of eloquence. And in his personal life, it is, you know, like he is an affront to everything that the Christian conservative base that represented that, you know, sort of leg of the stool in the 80s. So even if it was phony, you can argue some of that was phony. They're all phony. But like on its face, those are the three legs, and he gives you nothing.
No,
he gives them nothing.
The social conservative leg morphed at some point
to immigration,
maybe
to hating brown people,
into just hating the others. Right. Hating the people with the fake Americans, and hating the fake Americans is social conservatism. Now, there is nothing else. With Roe overturned, there's literally no other policy item. It's just, do you hate the bad people? And are you
not teaching the gay penguin book in schools?
Yeah. Right. Well, and that's where
he delivers.
There's also like there's the legs of the stool, and then there's like the part where your butt sits, you know, like the circle on top, which would have been things like character, self-determination, liking America, right? Like the less just, and those are gone too.
Shining city on the hill.
Yeah. This mother effer is sitting on the floor. They are sitting on the floor. The whole party sits on the floor.
You know, I wondered last night, we were talking about fact checking and how, you know, the very, very naughty fact checkers from ABC. One of the things Trump said was that he predicts that if Kamala Harris wins, that within 2 years, Israel won't exist. Do you think we could ask, I don't know, Bibi Netanyahu, if he thinks that Israel will still exist as a nation state should Kamala Harris win? I'd be curious what Israelis think about that. Do they think that they will cease to exist in 2 years?
I'll give Donald Trump credit on this. The only time he talked about the future at all during the debate was when he would bring up the dystopian future of a Kamala Harris presidency. Because he had nothing on his own, on the own side. Like, what I'm going to do, what we're going to do to make things great, how we're going to change things. Like, zero. So, yeah, that's it. I mean, it wasn't just Israel, right? It was like...
Everything. World War III.
Yeah.
They ruined the country.
Yeah.
You won't have a country.
We got waylaid. What do you guys... Because this is the one that I just genuinely don't know. And it's I'm just consumed by thinking about it all morning. Is he going to do it again? I thought it was so ballsy of the Harris team to go out last night immediately and just continue the alpha move. Because you could see, I could imagine a world being in those rooms where it's like David Plouffe saying we should do it again. And, you know, whoever is over here saying, I don't think, well, are we sure? Shouldn't we see the polls? And then Kamala's coming off stage and like, we shouldn't bug her with this. Like, we'll decide in the morning. No. Fuck it. They're just like, fuck it. No, we dominated him. We'll dominate you again. We're the alphas. Let's roll. And then it's him out there looking weak, being like, I don't know, maybe if the moderators are, maybe if Sean Hannity moderates, I'll do it. But it's like, could he really whimper out of it? It would be so weak.
Yeah, they should just keep dogging him for a debate.
It would be so weak. What do you think? What will he do?
Well, I mean, let's just.
I don't think he'll do it.
If you were Corey and you were running his campaign, what would you do?
I think that he's in the Biden shoes now. And I think you have to do it. Like, I'd be worried about it. I think maybe he's not up for it. But, like, who knows? Like, maybe he'll be scared into, pulling it together and we can give him some sniffers and so whatever, some Ritalin.
Maybe maybe the bar is so high for her.
For her
she
now.
Can't now duplicate
I
it.
Guess. I guess. Or I guess probably what I'm saying if I'm over there is the inverse of what I just said with Kamala. It's like, let's see what the polls look like in a week.
Yeah, if they feel like the bottom doesn't fall out and they feel like they're still kind of in it, like they probably just grind it out before risking another debate.
Yeah.
But if they get behind in a real way and like it's a Hail Mary opportunity to like get the conversation back to them, I guess I could see them doing it.
If Harris is under 50 or under 51 even, and he's sitting at 46, 47, I think that there's no real reason to do a debate. Like, I mean, and frankly, but there's also no reason not to. You know, at that point, if this debate doesn't really move the needle all that much, then you could do it or not do it, because he is just drawing to, he's got a low percentage play. He's got a 30 to 40% chance, and that's what it's going to be no matter what. Right?
Here's why I don't think they'll do it. If you're Chris Lacivita, Susie Wiles, or even Corey Lewandowski, what you saw last night, right, is, look, maybe I'm sure that Trump didn't prep that much or that Tulsi Gabbard prepped him badly or whatever. But, like, that is a guy with no self-control, right? That, like, she laid traps left and right. He walked into them, and there's nothing they can do to help him on those. I was watching J.D. Vance also in the spin room. He sat down with Caitlin Collins, and he was, like, doubling down on the dog-eating stuff, pet-eating stuff. And
people call him with secondhand accounts.
Sure.
What is he supposed to do?
It went on for, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah, it was really ridiculous.
On the but he at least... He at least is coherent.
He is.
On the cap point.
Sure.
I mean, it's absurd and it's a lie and it's shameful and it's racist. But his the point that he's trying to make, he gets across, which Trump doesn't. Trump's just like, they're eating dogs and like just word vomit.
Right. But if you're them and you just went through that like stomach churning, like, and you're like, oh my, like J.D. Vance, he's got to wake up today and be like, I just spent all night defending cat and dog eating, like, God, this isn't
he did it.
I understand.
Yeah,
did you see Eric Erickson? I gotta tell you, man, the conservative influencers, especially the ones who have gotten more pro-Trump since 2020, those are the worst ones. Eric Erickson, Patrick Ruffini, like those types are the absolute worst, because they are deeply disturbed by what they're seeing, right? And so they constantly look for somebody to blame. Eric Erickson is like all caps, just like Trump on Truth Social. You mother effers, I hope you feel good about this dog and cat thing. Now he's repeating your stupid talking points on TV. I'm like, again, okay, so apparently Trump has no agency. Oh, did your big bad beta baby not? Does he get baited by this weird stuff that JD? But also, the vice president's the one doing this, and Ted Cruz. Like, it's not like he's just yelling at some influencers. He's yelling at the Republican Party.
Take it up with the voters, right? Yeah. If you don't like this, if you don't like having a presidential nominee who has to get fact checked at a debate, then don't nominate a guy who lies pathologically.
Yeah.
Yeah,
find some voters that are looking for serious candidates. You're going to be looking for a while. I'm going to come down on the other side. I think that he does it.
Oh, really?
And it might be. I always say that I have a bad gaydar because my gaydar is influenced by wish casting a little bit. You know, if I'm hopeful, sometimes it messes up my radar.
Sure.
And this might be happening here, where I'm just so hopeful they do another debate because I deserve it. And, I want to go again and just watch them suffer. So caveating, But what I keep coming back to is, it would be so wimpy. Like, can he really look himself in the mirror and say, like, I can't beat her? I can't do this? That would be astonishing.
Why would he think that he couldn't beat her? Look, he came back from bad debates against Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, right?
That's
this
why
is why I think ultimately he does it. This is a guy who never turns down a chance to be on TV. And B, his recent past has shown, like, he can tell himself, I'm always bad in the first debate. I get him in the end.
Right? He's going to say he won. He needs his Binky now. He needs his Laura or his Sean Hannity or somebody like that to give him a soothing debate. She's not going to agree to a Fox News debate.
She'll just run it back with ABC. Go back with Mayer.
He said today he wouldn't do Fox with
Bear and McCallum. He was like, I would do it with Sean cuts. And Laura.
Yeah. That's right.
Maybe go back to CNN. We go back to Dana and Jake. What's the argument against it? You already won one.
Because they were disgraceful.
They weren't disgraceful.
Not their fault. It was an institutional decision, but they were disgraceful.
They weren't disgraceful. I disagree. But I do think that the ABC moderators were terrific. And I think this, like, crying foul from the right about the moderators is obviously also, like, deeply pathetic. Like, oh my God, our guy lost, I gotta blame the refs. But, like, they fact checked him three times. One, when he was like,
if you count them saying that he did actually lose the election.
Okay, so hold on. Well, so then find me the third one. So one is that they kill babies after they're born. That nobody's eating dogs and cats. There's no evidence of that.
Violent crime is down.
Violent crime is down.
That was the one where I was kind of like, I felt like they're going a little overboard. Kamala can do that.
Yeah.
If she wants to correct it. I felt like that one was a little much.
I mean,
but we're great now. I thought they did a great job.
Look, I want to just say very clearly here, at the level of a presidential debate, the moderators aren't making these decisions. These are corporate level decisions involving everybody at a company. So when I complain about Jake and Dana Bash, I'm complaining about CNN as an institution.
I also want to side with Sarah on that. So. I thought both times the debate. The debates are about the candidates. I hate the fucking debate whining. I hate it on the right. I hate it on the left. That's just me. If they do something really bad, you should criticize them. Something specifically bad. But I thought both debates ended up exactly as they should.
All right.
By the way, last thing before we lose. Yeah. Before I lead you. I do think we just have to talk about this. It turns out, and I know you're going to be surprised by this as I was, that Gish galloping is not.
Is it Gish
actually,
galloping? Gish galloping.
It's not. It's not actually like a magic potion, where if one person has decided to use the gish, then the other person is incapacitated and unable to combat it. As it turns out, it's a debate strategy that can be combated quite easily, actually, if you have a competent person on the other side.
I'm going to cop to having to look that up after you tweeted it, which is Gish galloping, which is, I assumed, how it was pronounced, is when you throw out a bunch of insane things, like it's a flood the zone with shit, actually, strategy. So where you say so many insane things that it is impossible for to be rebutted, you know, in real time, effectively. Except she did this, and this is where I'll say one last thing in closing about how deeply impressed I am with her. And it is this. I really feel for people in big moments, like the stress of the debate. Like, imagine being her, you know, and this is where I think this is where you test mettle for things like being president of the United States, because it is an enormous amount of pressure. Enormous amount of pressure to perform and do a really complicated set of things, which she achieved just in a spectacular fashion. She did more than I thought it really could be done in a debate setting. And one of the things that she did was really impressive was to be able to, because this is where you have to be unbelievable under pressure, is to be able to say, and this is, I struggle sometimes with this, where it's like, you say, I'm going to say a couple of things right now, right? And you say your first thing, and then you got to remember what your second thing was. And she kept doing that, where she's like, I'm going to address the first thing you said and explain why that's wrong. And now I'm going to go back and answer this question substantively, whatever. Doing that pivot in a high pressure situation is deeply difficult. And she was masterful.
Masterful.
She did a very, very good job. Very good job.
How about it?
And then Taylor Swift endorsed her like 5 minutes later.
Oh, yeah. Taylor Swift. We're all Swifties now.
It's something else. All right, guys. Good show. Long show. We'll be back next week when the polls will be totally unchanged because we live in a terrible country full of terrible people.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Love you.